Who knows more about Munster rugby, me or you, Quinny?
Everyone has an opinion, don't they? Some of the opinions are waffle, but I'd like to think I know a lot.
The Red 78 with Alan Quinlan and Niamh Briggs. Subscribe to the Rugby Channel on the OTB Sports app and turn on your notifications now.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off The Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Yes, you're welcome along to Wednesday Night Rugby. So very happy to say we have Keith Wood with us. Hello, Keith Wood.
Hello, Joseph.
How are you doing? It's been a while, actually. How are you keeping?
Great form, thank you. Very good form.
Very good. And Fiona Hayes back with us. Hi, Fiona.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Very good. I'm sure you know Mr. Wood down the years, unfortunately or fortunately.
We're having a good chat here. You interrupted us. We were really digging deep. You missed some gems, as he said.
We're laughing away here. You kept us hanging on there for a while, Joe.
My apologies. Well, we're good to go now. There is plenty going on. So Andy Farrell has named his squad for the November internationals. The IRFU communications department has been busy this afternoon when it comes to various reports into and reviews of the women's game. And then, of course, the United Rugby Championship continues round five incoming, not least at the Aviva on Saturday for Connacht against Ulster. We might start with the Irish squad. 22 matches until the World Cup for Andy Farrell, and four of them come up next month. USA, 30th of October. Japan on the 6th. The All Blacks are in town, 13th of November, and then Argentina on the 21st. So 38-man squad. Some of the headline news. Simon Zeebo returns to the Irish fold after his French exodus, his banishment for the first time since June 2017. That was the last time he was in a green shirt. So Simon Zeebo returns. We have two uncapped inclusions in Kieran Frawley and Dan Sheehan, both of Leinster, obviously. The out-halves we were all curious about. It's Harry Byrne who gets the nod. So Harry Byrne alongside Joey Carberry and Johnny Sexton. And then the word on Robbie Henshaw is that he'll continue his rehabilitation programme, so he's not in the squad. And then of those players who played in the summer series, six of them who won their first caps in the summer series have been included. So Robert Balakoon is in, Harry Byrne I mentioned, Gavin Coombs is in, James Hume in, Tom O'Toole and Nick Timoney. And then I suppose in, well, it's a departure from the previous regime, we get told these things now. Thomas Ahern and Jamie Osborne not in the squad as such, but they will train as part of their development during the window. So that is the 38-man squad. Keith, initial reactions, what jumps out?
First thing that jumps out is the transparency. So there is an awful lot of additional information that we haven't been used to getting. So that is very good to get and see, because I always think in a vacuum, people make up their own ideas of what's happening or not happening, and that's where conspiracies kind of go. Look, I think everybody will start to talk about the guys that are missing at 10. And all the conversation that was last week was like a showdown between Jack Carty and Joey Carberry. And we don't see that in this one. We see that our wingers are... our wingers, our out halves are Joey and Harry Byrne. So the younger Byrne brother gets in. That'll be an interesting dinner. And Johnny's in. Johnny's in as captain, and Joey's in. So I think that will be what everybody starts to kind of grasp and look on very quickly. That and Simon Zeebo coming back. And look, I would have said that Zeebo was going to have to come into it because he has the X factor. Yes, he's pushing on, and we often want to look for change, but he also has a huge level of versatility about him. He also has the capacity to play at fullback or on the wing. And if we're being honest, fullback has been a slightly awkward position for Ireland for the last period of time. We've tried a few people out in there, and none of them have quite ticked all the boxes. So, look, I think it's one of the reasons for him to come back and play for Munster is to go and play for Ireland again. So I'd say he's pretty thrilled.
That's interesting. I thought we were all pretty much on board with the fact that Hugo Keenan had come in and seamlessly made that number 15 jersey his own, no?
I love Hugo Keenan. I love watching the way he plays. I love the fact that he has been very, very secure. But I would have said we tried Larmer and Jacob Stockdale there for a period of time, and we are only ever one injury away, as people keep saying, as I keep saying. And so I'm very happy to have Ziba back in the squad, to know that we have a different threat that goes there. He's incredibly good under the high ball, and I think he offers a huge sense of security in the fact that if Hugo Keenan, who is the man in the jersey, if he has an injury, that we're not going to be grasping at somebody who hasn't or doesn't play there all the time. So that's, for me, it's a security thing. It gives us a far greater strength and depth.
Well, just looking at, say, the back three options, Fiona, just flicking through the 18 backs in the squad. So Robert Balakoon is in, and I think people are very excited about what he can bring to the party, although he did, against Glasgow, miss a tackle very badly when opposing players just running straight at him. It's the kind of thing you suspect might stick in a head coach's mind. But Balakoon is in for obvious reasons and the gifts he has. Andrew Conway is back in. Keith Earls, who we'll get on to later on in the chat, is in. Hugo Keenan, Jordan Larmour, James Lowe, and Simon Zebo. So give me your back three there. Is Simon Zebo going to be a starter for Ireland, do we think, against, say, the New Zealand game, which is maybe the one that we're building towards? There's plenty of options.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of options there. I mean, as Keith said, I think you have Keenan has nailed in that starting 15 jersey. So it's kind of what you're looking for on the wing. You spoke about Balakoon. He offers excitement similar to Zebo. But I suppose when you're looking at Zebo with his caps, you're probably looking at him at being a bit safer in a big game like that. I'm a big fan of Zebo. What I suppose, we looked at that Munster game at the weekend. The ball didn't even get out to him. We didn't get to see him. We didn't get to see him in action. We were all waiting for that back three to light it up, and it didn't happen. So it depends. It depends what type of play Ireland are going looking at playing, and if we can get him free and get our wingers on free in each side. Obviously, Earlsey is definitely up there. You mean in camp, he's going to offer the young guys coming through a lot of experience with him. So I don't know. I think they'll be looking to test a few guys in the first games before we get to that All Blacks game. And then we'll see who's playing on form then.
Fiona, we spoke a few weeks back and you were certainly saying that you weren't so sure of Joey Carberry's form. I'd say those concerns remain, but invariably he deserves time and patience, and there's credit in the bank. So it's no surprise to see Joey Carberry involved, obviously. And then it was always going to be one from Harry Byrne, Ross Byrne, Jack Carty, Billy Burns. Why do you think Andy Farrell has gone with Harry Byrne, and do you agree?
Me personally, based on form and kind of injuries, I don't agree. I think Jack Carty has probably played, you know, the most relaxed, best rugby we've seen him play in a while. I actually thought he had a very good game against Munster as well. I know people speak of his consistency at times, but we haven't seen enough of Harry Byrne this season to say that, you know, he's jumped ahead against Jack in the race. And he's also a young out half, so maybe he's in there, to learn from you know, Johnny, Joey, but I definitely would have loved to have seen Jack Carty up there. I just don't think we've seen Harry. He's been on the pitch for a few minutes, went off with injury. It's almost like, you know, Johnny was carrying a niggle. We haven't even got anyone nailed down, I don't think, certainly to start that tin jersey for the first game.
Yeah, it's sort of a strange dynamic. I mean, the first game you would think won't be overly taxing. It's the US first, isn't it? Then Japan. So there is this dynamic, Keith, where you have Johnny, and we more than know what Johnny can do, but there's an injury there. And then in Carberry, there's the hope that Carberry returns. And then in Harry Byrne, there's the hope that Harry Byrne fulfills the promise that a lot of the experts in the game tell us that he has. But there's no one there that you can definitely bank on. Well, to be fair, Sexton you can. But the other two are kind of at interesting places in their careers, Carberry and Harry Byrne.
Look, it's been interesting at 10 for 5 years. Mm. And
is that a euphemism? Troublesome.
Yes, it really is. And yeah. The fact that nobody is nailed down has been quite tough for the team, actually, because it's tough for Johnny because the conversation constantly goes on. For me, I don't know that I agree with Fiona necessarily about Jack Carty, and I looked at the game the other day and I think he outplayed Joey. I think we can say that with the greatest of comfort. Yet I didn't think he was great either. So I thought he was better. So I'm looking at Joey and saying, towards the end of last season, even though he wasn't playing unbelievably well, there was a spark. I haven't seen that spark this season. So this could be a great opportunity to reignite that. And like, I'm hoping there's no lingering injuries. I'm hoping that it's just a confidence idea. But I also noticed that the manner in which Munster played the game last week was in stark contrast to the manner in which they played the previous week. So where they attacked at every single phase nearly the previous week. And they did kick the ball, of course you do. But it was played at a pace. So I got frustrated watching Munster play last week 4-9-10 for Craig Casey, who's having to slow down the ball and box kick. I just don't think that's his game, and I think it doesn't suit him particularly. And for Joey, that was slow down, whereas he often wants to attack it. So I think it's a kind of perfectly difficult situation for Carberry to set the world on fire at the moment with Munster, even though Munster are winning. I'm hoping that this chance of getting into the Ireland squad, where he gets an opportunity to show his skills with really class guys outside him, I'm hoping, a faster style. I hope Ireland really have, you know, build on the changes that they'd started to make last year. I just really hope that that grows, and I hope we get to see the best of him, because he is a guy that we do want. Redburn has a touch of magic about him, but we don't get to see a huge amount of it. So, like, it's very, very difficult. So you can go and say, do we want, and I'm trying to put my head into the heads of the selectors, do we want to pick players that we think could play the game that we want to play, that could be magic? Well, if that's the case, they're the two guys that are with Johnny.
Yeah, I would suspect they're looking at this as, we have 22 games. We have no time to spare here. If we think Harry Byrne, for instance, in 22 games might be our guy, then it's a pity he's not playing more for Leinster, Fiona. And he is due, we think, to play this weekend, so we might get a glimpse of him. But I would think that is their thinking. Carberry and they've decided Harry Byrne are their best bet if Sexton doesn't make it as a starter to the World Cup. So there's no time for them to play their way in via the provinces. They just, Farrell and co, just have to get them in and work with them, I would suspect, is the thinking.
Yeah, well, that's it. Like, I mean, you look at both players and they do offer you that X factor as a 10. But as Keith said, we haven't seen it enough. So I presume they're going to get him in. Maybe they think that they can ignite that when they're up at camp, or the style of play that they want to play is including these two guys. So with the 22 games, it's obviously quick style of rugby is what we're looking at playing. And maybe, you know, maybe Jack Carty didn't fit into that mould that Andy Farrell maybe thinks he wants his team playing going into that World Cup.
Any glaring omissions for you, Fiona? I tweeted out the squad and, for instance, I saw Gordon Darcy tweeted back and he was saying, what does Jack O'Donoghue have to do? And I'm sure Jack O'Donoghue's feeling sore. I'm sure Reese Ruddock is thinking, God, what do I have to do? Dan Levy's not in the squad either, obviously. Still, I think he's just had 5 starts since his injury, so no place for Dan Levy. But any glaring omissions for you?
No, definitely. I think that back row is crazy competition at the minute. For Irish rugby, it's absolutely brilliant. I mean, we don't really even talk about Jack O'Donoghue enough. For me, every game at Munster, he's the man. He's there, he's controlling things when Peter O'Mahony is away, but he is so, so good. We saw for that last try for Munster as well, just slick hands to pop it out, you know, for that winning try essentially. But for me, I would have loved to have seen, maybe not even in there, but maybe carried in, is Nathan Doak. I mean, we're looking at form. I know he hasn't played loads, but it would have been great to get him up to that camp and maybe getting him involved. A lot of people up in Ulster are talking a lot about him. So obviously, and another one I think that might, but as I spoke about back row, is Max Deegan as well. I mean, he's another guy that's playing really well. It's just, the competition is just amazing in that back row. So it's really, really hard.
Yeah, no, the question definitely gets harder when I ask who you're kicking out to make place for the lads you've mentioned. Keith, anyone for you? And if you are nailing colours to the mast, you have to kick someone out for me.
Well, I would say that Jack O'Donoghue is playing better than Peter O'Mahony. And so when it's very funny, I often hear when commentators talk about picking a team on form, it's one of the great lies of all time, because they take an awful lot more into consideration than just form. But I do think there's been towards the end of last season, Jack seemed to play a bit better, I think he plays consistently well all the time, but I think he'd pushed his standard, his base level of consistency to a higher level towards the end of last season, and he has started in that fashion this season. So I think we see him doing more than Peter O'Mahony. Peter O'Mahony does an awful lot of very eye-catching elements. A lot of really good steals at ruck time, a lot of very good line-out play. But I think Jack is doing an awful lot more. So I'm not saying you drop Peter out of it, but I think you'll see a lot of these guys are under pressure, because when we start talking about Johnny Sexton, as we invariably do, being old, we also talk about the other guys that are there that are over 30 and what they have to do to absolutely guarantee their position on the team is to be very effective all the time. So they can't really afford to have bad days anymore. I love the idea, 22 matches to go. What do you do? What do you do next? Do you start making changes on the hope that you're there, that you end up with enough of players that are sharp enough by the time you get to World Cup time to deliver and have enough experience to deliver? Are you trying to hold on to guys to get the last ounce out of them? Well, we've done the latter on the last couple of World Cups, and it hasn't gone as well for us. Now, World Cups are always seem to be our kind of stumbling block, but look, it may be the time to give youth the chance.
Absolutely. Well, it starts 30th of October is the USA game, Japan on the 6th, and as I mentioned, New Zealand 13th of November, and they'll conclude 21st of November with Argentina. Now, Keith, I'm curious for your thoughts on all this. So the IRFU press office busy today. I don't know, is it a coincidence they bring this out today, the same day as the squad being named, because you wanted to go under the radar, or is this just the day it was always due to come out? And who knows, it doesn't really matter ultimately. So they've announced an independent review into effectively what went wrong with the women's team failing to qualify for the World Cup. So just to bring people a sense of what the statement said, the IRFU has appointed Amanda Bennett. She's a former Welsh international. She's a founder of Fair Play. And so she's going to come in as an independent consultant, and she will conduct an independent review into the, what they say, preparation, participation and performance of the Irish women's 15s during the recent World Cup qualifying campaign. She'll be joined by Kevin Bowring and Helen Phillips on the review panel. Just looking into Amanda Bennett, so as I mentioned, Welsh rugby international. She was the UK sport head of governance for a time. She was chair of European Women in Sport, founder member of Saracens Women's Rugby. So that committee will report back in 8 or 9 weeks or so. Now, there's no word as to whether or not the report will be public in any way, but they'll report back in 8 or 9 weeks. And then they go on to say that'll feed into a wider review. The wider review is looking at all aspects of the women's game, and that's going to be chaired by John Robinson, who's senior vice president of the IRFU. Philip Brown will be on the committee as well. Fiona Steed will be there, Sue Carty, and Amanda Bennett will again be involved in that. And that's to look at the women's game on the whole. So the domestic game and how it aligns with the high performance end of things, a review of player pathways, etc. And that report will be due out in early 2022. Again, no word if any of that is public. Thoughts on all this, Keith?
Well, the women game often gets the short straw, but I think in this instance, it's getting it's getting it first. It's getting the right thing for rugby first. This is what should have happened to the men's game after the last World Cup and didn't. And I think they're ahead of all the issues in this. And again, I love that sense of transparency. This is an integral review that should happen after any World Cup success or failure, or any campaign success or failure. And it should be absolutely built into the DNA of what rugby is on this island. We want to get better all the time. We want to highlight the things that have gone badly and make certain we can sort them out in the future, and absolutely highlight the things that have gone well so we can repeat it again. I think it's actually great. I don't consider it bad news, and I don't think they're trying to sneak it out on a day when there's a squad announced that it won't go or unnoticed.
It's a hell of a coincidence, though, I would say.
Well, I just think I think it's great. It's out there.
Sure. And would you advocate this report being made public?
Absolutely.
Or is that tricky territory?
100%. No, right. That's treason. I mean, there's everybody's a stakeholder in this. Every fan that pays to go in through the turnstiles, they don't need to see the inner workings of every different element of every union or every club, but they do need to see some of the issues that have happened because they're funding it for the most part. And it's actually, if I bring it back to 2007 failure of New Zealand in the World Cup, they did an unbelievable review, coruscating review on what they had done wrong and badly for that World Cup, made it common knowledge and went out there and they made all the changes afterwards. And they said they weren't hitting the mark where they wanted to on a whole variety of different elements. And they redid their whole structure to try and tidy it up so that they could peak at World Cups and try and make certain that they got the players to the place that they needed them to be. So I think that's something that's brilliant. It's actually something the men's game needs to do as well.
Yeah. And, I mean, from memory, the men's game did do it after the World Cup, didn't they? And it was talk of the mental fragility almost, that the pressure got to them was one of the findings, and I think a failure to adapt the game plan. So there was a report after that World Cup in 19, all right. I just don't know how thorough it was or how detailed it was ultimately. I think Enda McNulty fell on his sword afterwards, for instance.
Yeah, look, I love the fact that this is an independent review. Yeah. This is the key component to it. Is that you're not having people that are involved compiling the review. You know, it's very hard to be a judge, jury and executioner for yourself. And I think having that level of independence is fantastic.
Yeah. So Fiona, Amanda Bennett will get to the bottom of what went on the pitch. And then there's this second wider report about the women's game on the whole. Say, for instance, Amanda Bennett was to call you up as part of that second wider review, which is trying to look into the domestic game, high performance game, how the whole thing can move on and improve. And she was to say, Fiona, give me something which jumps out to you as an easy win that's not being done in the women's game across the country from grassroots up to high performance that we should be doing. What kind of thing or things might you mention?
Yeah, I suppose there's lots of things, obviously, like being involved in women's rugby for a long time. And as Keith said, I just think it's absolutely brilliant that this is an independent review. It's what's needed. And one of the main things for me that really needs to be looked at is that grassroots is the AIL competition itself and players taking part in it. I know they talk a lot about the men's game and releasing players back to clubs, but you have to remember in the women's game, they're not contracted. You know what I mean? They're a couple of sevens players are, but in general, they're up in camp and they haven't been playing AIL rugby. They haven't been playing rugby. So for me, it's making that AIL competition really, really competitive, be it maybe even looking at moving players around to different clubs and getting that up and running, getting that competitive, not sending players overseas to England and really upping our game here so that they can take that step up to maybe interprovincial level and then on to international level.
Very good. We don't have too much time to get into the other press release, but it was about the Energy of Park review and that's been conducted and Philip Brown says everyone appalled, we all take responsibility. The findings of this are there was ambiguity as to who was responsible for the organisation of the game. This was when the players were changing next to the dump effectively at Energy of Park. There was a lack of personnel at the ground to properly manage the occasion. And so going forward now, there'll be a set of minimum standards for any Interpro games and there'll be additional training to staff and volunteers. And there will be a female liaison officer appointed by all the provincial branches and that will be a dedicated position. And then the IRFU will ultimately have a single point of responsibility for the delivery of appropriate structures as well for the Interpro Championship. So it seems like they have put forward a number of findings. We should move on. We may come back to that at some stage if required, but we should move on because I do want to touch on the actual rugby on the pitch. United Rugby Championship is continuing. We're into week five. This weekend we have Ulster against Connacht at the Aviva Stadium, which should be a great occasion. Leinster away to Glasgow and then Munster away to Ospreys. You both, I think, at different points there referenced some frustrations with Munster at the weekend. So maybe we dive right in there, Fiona. You mentioned, I think, Simon Zeba not getting the ball much. I was watching Eddie O'Sullivan during the week on Against the Head and he was kind of going through Munster's attacking play and he was saying, yeah, okay, a couple of little bits of progression here or there, but ultimately he was saying it's a lot of one-off stuff and there's no real sparkle to Munster's attack despite how the coaching staff might want to dress it up. What are you seeing?
Yeah, it's mad because just like maybe the week before when we had all those changes, we were talking about how we could see progression in that game and, you know, that we were going wider. We saw, you know, wasn't one soft rugby. There wasn't too much kicking. We were all excited about that game and we were just waiting in anticipation for this big Connacht game. And for me personally, I just felt like, yeah, it was physical. It was a massive battle. Maybe game plan had to be changed. But exactly as Keith said, it was just not the rugby I expected from Munster in that game. Big performance physically from them at times, but just in attack, we were just dead. We were flat. We had an exciting, we spoke about Zeebo, how exciting he is. I think he touched the ball maybe twice in the whole game. I was actually in Thomond Park in a stand watching it in the rain thinking, oh my God, this is horrible rugby. but look, it was a win in the end, controversial as it was, but definitely not the exciting rugby that we've seen previously. I don't know if that's a coaching style changing it for the game, or if it's the players themselves that were involved.
What do you think the answer to that is, Keith?
Well, I don't know. I think it's easier for the younger players to change their style, old dogs and new tricks and all that sort of stuff. So for the younger guys can go, and playing away from home often lends you to kind of be a little bit freer because you can try things a little bit more. But I don't know what it was. I felt the tempo of the game was poor. It was a hard game. For me, it was a hard game to watch because this was the first game where there is something really on the line. There's a higher level of pride for this game. And like we often don't give Connacht credit, but Connacht they won a trophy far sooner than Munster have, or more recently. They are well able to play at different types and different styles. They play bloody well and put you under an awful lot of pressure.
Would you say okay, Munster won the game, so there's that, but Connacht are a better watch than Munster, are they not?
They're a much better watch. No, not all the time. And a lot of the time you want to play and win and see what it's like, and you'll be happier if you won. So the niggling thought that I have when I watched the game at the weekend, this is the first game under pressure. Munster should have lost the game. It was ahead of the kicker. That should have been, like, the fact that it didn't go back to TMO, or the TMO wasn't talking about it and made a snap decision on it, for me was incredibly frustrating as a rugby fan. And I'm trying to say that, look, did I want Munster to get away with it? No, I don't. I didn't, actually, because there's a bigger issue here that should have been looked at again, and it was ahead of the kicker. So that was, for me, that's an issue, and I can understand why Connacht are so aggrieved with it. Connacht are a joy to watch. They can be very frustrating as well. Munster are a better team, have more resource, use it pretty well, have a very good competitive nature about them. I'd love if they use the ball more like Connacht, and I think that would be very, very potent, because the style that was played last Saturday will not beat any of the bigger teams at all. So that's the point. That's why it's frustrating. And you're looking, you say, well, Munster have won all their games, what more can they do? Well, they have to show more in that instance. I just thought the lack of passing, not even passing ability, but passing in the game, it would seem to be far easier to kick the ball out of hand. And Scanlon in the centre kicks far more often than he passes. And that's not what really you want for your centre. And I think without Demian Deolande in that team, Munster look very, very shallow in the centre.
We should mention Keith Earls, and I did read out his quotes at length on Monday, so I apologise if I'm repeating myself, but maybe the quotes bear repeating, and I know not everyone might have heard Monday Night Rugby or necessarily read all his interviews over the weekend, but what he has done here as a current player is genuinely extraordinary. So it's all part of his new book, Fight or Flight, with Tommy Conlon, and talks about a few different things. Certainly the physical injury record is horrific. Like, he talks, for instance, about excruciating, this is in the Life magazine, for instance, Sunday Independent at the weekend, excruciating back pain. It ruined my life. I dreaded training. I came to hate rugby. I wanted to walk away from it to make the pain stop. It was back, it was neck, groin, hernia, a bit of everything. I had huge breathing problems too. And if you read the extract in the Irish Times on Saturday, the breathing situation was, I'd say, bizarre and worrying. It was across the 3-4 years, by the way, when he played outstanding rugby for Ireland, won a Grand Slam with Ireland, and you'd think of him being extremely fit across that period, but he was struggling to breathe. a lot of time on the pitch, and eventually a London consultant seemed to somehow figure out that his liver had been dislodged and was putting pressure on his breathing. And so one day before a match, they decided to tightly wrap his torso in tape in a bid to try and hold his liver in place. And he ran out and was able to breathe again for the first time in several years. But he talked about how I'd put the physios under awful pressure, stuff like getting acupuncture at half time when I'm breathing through my arse. There'd be needles in my neck trying to free up whatever pain I was in. Thankfully, he seems to have gotten top of that issue now. But then, I suppose even more extraordinary, he's come forward and he talked on the Late Late Show about his mental health issues. And he refers to Hank, and he borrowed that from Me, Myself and Irene, that Jim Carrey film. And Hank, to Earl's mind, is the part of him that's prone to bouts of severe depression, he told Life magazine. And on the Late Late Show, he said, "Thankfully, I've never had suicidal thoughts, but Hank is always there. He's always negative. And he's a fella I've lived with for most of my life now. There are games I probably shouldn't have played in. I was in such a bad place mentally, but I found a way to get onto the pitch and take Hank down." 2013, he was talking about that year on the Late Late Show. "I rang the doctor. I explained everything to him. He was brilliant. I went down to see a guy in Cork, a psychiatrist, and he diagnosed me with bipolar 2. There's obviously bipolar 1 as well, but bipolar 2 is probably the better one of the two to get. I was delighted to get the diagnosis. I was genuinely losing my mind." And then one final quote back to Life magazine here. "Got to the point I was complaining so much to Adele, she got annoyed, unbelievably annoyed, because I was just draining her. I wouldn't have been one bit surprised if she'd left me, but being the person she was, she helped me get through it." And he says of antidepressant medication, "I'm still taking tablets to help balance out the chemicals in my brain. I've no doubt that when I retire, I'll be able to come off them. I'll be able to manage better because I've dug deep. I found myself as well. I know when Keith is in my head, and I know when Hank is in my head, and I know how to get out of depression quicker." And then quite poignantly, he says, "I'm embarrassed to speak about all this. I know I shouldn't be embarrassed, but I am. And my embarrassment is smaller than how it might help other people." Now, Keith, that is genuinely extraordinary from a fella who's been a credit to himself and Ireland down the years. I think he's kind of gone from beloved status in Irish rugby to revered at this point.
I think so. Can you imagine how hard it was to do that? And sometimes you want to put your record straight, and the cynics out there will say, well, it's part of him selling a book. The amount of money you get for selling a book isn't a huge amount. It's not that idea. I think it is about putting his emotions on the line that he's had for a career in sport. I think it's an extraordinary display of courage on his part to do it. It's also a huge recognition that sport is often a mirror of what happens in everyday life. So depression is part and parcel of the whole of society, and it's often kind of pushed under the carpet a little and not discussed too much, and it was rarely ever discussed when we were growing up. It just wasn't part of our, of upbringing, really, back in the 70s and 80s. To have a sportsman still playing and being able to do that shows fantastic courage. And I don't know, I've always had a thing about Keith. He went to my school. He grew up in Moyross. He has been an incredible flag carrier for the sport, for his city, for his school, and now he is for mental health issues. I think it's a pretty extraordinary thing for a young man to be able to do, and it's and he still wants to see more of himself on a rugby field. So the idea that he's that done prior to the end of his career is pretty magic as well.
Yeah, incredible resilience for the last 10, 15 years on his part, Fiona.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's just amazing character. I live over the road from him, and he literally, like, he's not a man who's always talking, or full of conversation, So for him to come out and actually say that on television was just absolutely brilliant. I think it was, I think Johan Van Grant spoke about it, that he could save people's lives. And I really, really do believe that. He's an absolute inspiration, and it wasn't easy for him to do that. And he spoke about his past, and he laid everything bare. And the thing about it is, kids look at him on the pitch and we look at him and all you think, he's a great life, or Instagram, or whatever way you want to look at it. People don't understand the hardship that that's behind it. And I think for other people now to see that someone at that top elite level can go through something like that and still survive. And he talks about how he fixed it. You know, he still deals with it, but he was able to name it and try and move on. I think that was the inspiration.
Yeah, well said. Agree totally. Amazing Keith Earls this week. So we are out of time. My thanks to you both. Our rugby coverage was with thanks to Vodafone, sponsors of the Irish rugby team, Team of Us, everyone in. Fiona Hayes, thank you. Great to have you on, Fiona.
No worries, Joe. Sound out.
Cheers. Keith Wood, talk to you soon. Cheers.
Cheers, Joe. Bye.
Bye, bye.
Wednesday night rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of Us, everyone in.